Welcome back to another week of Behind the Lens. I'm Debbie Elias, film critic, creator, and host of Behind the Lens, where we go behind the lens and below the line with those movers and shakers, those film and TV makers, the producers, directors, writers, actors, cinematographers, production designers, costume designers, sound editors, sound mixers, film editors, composers, VFX artisans, you name it, we talk to them. And boy, oh boy, it's been, I wasn't here last week because last week was a jam-packed week, folks, and you're going to hear about part of it now. Part of it you can already see up on BehindTheLensOnline.net with 17 red carpet interviews from the 15th annual TCM Classic Film Festival that just concluded last night in Hollywood, California. Also celebrating the 30th anniversary of TCM. Now, all of you know, our regular listeners, my regular readers, you know, classic film is dear to my heart, and I champion it everywhere, the same way I champion indie films. But also, last week started off, I wasn't here because I was winging my way to Vegas for the National Association of Broadcasting, Broadcasters Convention, to see what's new and upcoming in the world of tech that will be shooting all of these TV shows and films that you all know and love and sometimes hate so well. So it has been a whirlwind past 10 days. But we're back. We're back on schedule. I'm here today. But needless to say, things are not starting off very smoothly this morning. As you know, the wonderful Frank Meyer was scheduled to be here live today. However, Frank was involved in a car accident the other day. So is carless this morning dealing with insurance appraisers and trying to get a rental car. He's fine, so he claims. I hope I see him later today, but he would not be able to accomplish all of that and get here to Whittier in time to do the show. But never fear, Frank is going to be calling in shortly. So you're going to get to hear from the horse's mouth all about his whirlwind tour of Spain with the Streetwalkin' Cheetahs. And I think he has some announcements about the punk group Fear, with whom he is now also playing with. And I think there's some great information there. I know there's a new Streetwalkin' Cheetahs EP that's coming out. There is also a new single for Streetwalkin' Cheetahs. So we got a lot to talk about with Frank when he calls in shortly. But first, I want to talk to you some more about TCM Film Fest. What a great festival. Kicking off the festival was Pulp Fiction for its 30th anniversary. And on hand for the opening night, and they took to the stage before the film opened, John Travolta, Uma Thurman, Samuel L. Jackson, Rosanna Arquette, Lawrence Bender, Harvey Keitel, Phil LaMarr, Michael Schamberg, Stacey Scherer, Burr Steers, Eric Stoltz, Julia Sweeney, Frank Whaley. And as a surprise, Emma Willis and Tallulah Willis came. They were not on stage, but because Bruce Willis was in the film and such an integral part of it, they were there to show support, and also received an incredible outpouring of love from the audience for Bruce. But along the way, I spoke with, on the carpet, and the interviews are up there, BehindTheLensOnline.net, as well as on the Behind the Lens Online YouTube channel, my interviews with Julia Sweeney, Eric Stoltz, Burr Steers, John Travolta. So I've got a clip from time was so short by the time Travolta and Sam Jackson were on the carpet. And it's like, show's got to start. They got to get in the theater. So I got one question with John, asking him about how important it is to be at TCM Film Festival for this 30th anniversary of TCM, the 15th anniversary of the fest, and the fact that Pulp Fiction shares its 30th anniversary with TCM. So here's what John had to say.
And how important is it to you to be at TCM for the 30th anniversary and the 15th TCM?
TCM is my favorite channel. This is what I watch mostly. Documentaries and TCM. So, that being said, I've watched them copiously take care of the history of film and the idea that they're, you know, smart enough to take this moment where we're still all alive and archive it for another 30 years when they're showing, hey, we were the station that brought the group together even 30 years after.
So it's been on my side.
That's pretty good.
I'm happy to see you here, Don.
And an extremely thoughtful, an insightful response from John to my question. Very happy to know he loves TCM. But I like the way he's saying that, you know, they have, that TCM copiously, you know, documents and archives all of these classic films. And this has been an ongoing debate for a number of years about what is a classic film. And, you know, as time marches on, for the longest time, people were saying, no, it's only those in the golden age of Hollywood running up into, from the start of film, silence, the 30s, 40s, 50s, maybe into the 60s. But as the decades move on, we have to expand the definition of classic film, which is exactly what TCM is doing, especially in this 30th year, as their media campaign, their outlook, it's then meets now. You know, much like the reworking of my theme music, the theme music here for Behind the Lens. It's the same theme song that we've had since the beginning, but now Frank Meyer, a brilliant musical arranger besides being musician, singer, director, author, and good all-around friend, Frank updated the theme music so that then meets now. Peppier, spicier, moving ahead into the future. But some amazing, amazing insight from a lot of the talent that I spoke with on the carpet on Thursday night. And that started off with Cora Sue Collins. Classic film fans will know, they know who Cora Sue Collins is. Cora Sue Collins, she's 97 years young. She walked that entire red carpet, not in a walker, not sitting down in a scooter. She walked it. And she was considered, she was a child actor, and many considered to be a rival to Shirley Temple. Of course, who could possibly rival Shirley Temple? But that was the, you know, the tag that Cora had for many, many, many years when she was acting. She's remained active in the business. She has been at the festival, I think, every year. But for the two, it was virtual due to COVID and lockdowns. But she always makes time. She sits down. She, you know, does small groups of Q&As with the fans. She is a joy and truly embraces cinema in all its forms. Also caught up with our friend Ben Burt, who has been on the show before. Academy Award winning sound guru Craig Barron, a VFX master. It's always fun at TCM because when Craig and Ben get together, because they always do something that involves sound and visual effects, generally with a sci-fi theme. And this year, it was for the movie Them. So they gave me a little bit of insight of what was going to happen, what they were going to be demonstrating for everybody at the Them screening. And they had a mystery guest with them who wasn't being announced until the Them screening. And it happened to be Sandy Desher. And for those of you that know the movie Them, Sandy was the young traumatized girl screaming and shrieking. Of course, had to talk with my pal Dave Karger. Also, the Czar of Noir, Eddie Muller, along with Dana Delaney. These two they've got to get a comedy shtick and get on the road with it. Legend, Academy Award winner, George Chakiris. You can hear my interview with George. Keith Carradine. Keith wasn't there last year. He was there this year. Very excited that Keith introduced The Prisoner of Shark Island. It is an obscure film directed by John Ford and starring Keith's father, John Carradine. I love the film. It's very hard to find. If you ever find it, I highly recommend you watch it. You will enjoy it. But everybody knows John Ford for Westerns. Not Shark Island. But I got to tell you, it's a winner. As I mentioned, I spoke with Eric Stoltz, Bert Spears, Julia Sweeney, talking about Pulp Fiction. And of course, a big surprise was Lawrence Hilton Jacobs showed up to celebrate and surprise his fellow sweat hog, John Travolta, for the evening. Just spoke with Mike Newell. He was there to introduce and talk about his film, Four Weddings and a Funeral. But also, don't forget, Mike Newell is the man who brought us Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. So there was a lot of magic happening. Trini Alvarado is as charming and as wonderful as ever. She took a lot of time off to raise her family, but she is just spectacular. And of course, the dear Mario Van Peebles and his daughter Morgana were there because Mario had a very interesting role during this film festival, because the theme of the festival was Most Wanted, Crime and Justice in Film. And a lot of the programming dealt with, naturally, film noir, because so many of the crime films of the 30s and 40s, they fell into the film noir genre. But there was also a fascinating panel that Mario participated in, Reflections on the Thin Blue Line. It was moderated by TCM's Jacqueline Stewart, and it dealt with how police conduct, misconduct, how it was dealt with, especially in those pre-code eras and the early eras of film. Now, Mario is well known, as was his father, for their films involving social justice and the issues of black, brown, black versus white. And he was a perfect person to have on this panel discussion with a former NYPD detective who just happened to be the detective involved in the extortion case, the David Letterman extortion case a number of years ago. And then a law professor who specializes in sociology and situations such as that are presented with crime in films, police presentation, victim presentation. So Mario was there for that. But Mario and I on the carpet also got to talk about his new film, which is out. You can find it. It's streaming. It's on cable. It is called Outlaw Posse. And he turns the tables here on who should be a hero is now a villain, but who really may very well be a hero as you watch the film. Outlaw Posse, it's a wonderful film. I really love it. Shot on location in Montana. And there are cave sequences. And as Mario was telling me, some of the sequences were actually shot in real caves. So just a ton of fun. And Whoopi Goldberg is also in the film as stagecoach Stagecoach Mary, who has a policy of you can't ride her stagecoach and carry a gun. So she will take, if you want to ride the stage, great, but you're going to give her the gun and she's going to stow it up front with her. So nobody inside has guns. So there, and in the movie, Mario, as usual, also tackles, discrimination, discrimination against women, immigration, just so many topics. And I'm happy to say that Mario and I are going to be hooking up shortly. And we're going to do a sit down to go really in depth about Outlaw Posse. But I'll have more for you this week on BehindTheLensOnline.net after I write it all up. Because being at the festival for 12 to 15 hours every day doesn't give you much time to do anything else when you throw in 3 to 4 hours of driving as well. But a wonderful, wonderful festival. Of course, it started early for me. There is a new, for all of you fans out there, that and visitors to L.A., and you go to Warner Brothers for the studio tour, which is a great tour, but now they have an added attraction to it. It is now the Warner Brothers TCM Classic Film Tours. They have opened up areas of Warner Brothers backlot that have never been opened to the public before. The original Termite Terrace, which was the original animation house at Warner Brothers. Lots of fun stuff that goes along with that. There are other new areas. You now get to go through the jungle areas. New within the walkthroughs, such as costuming. They've got a beautiful display right now of costumes, one of which is the entire Ascot sequence from My Fair Lady. And these, they will be rotating out. In addition, there are single costumes just of notable stars, Olivia de Havilland, Betty Davis, Joan Crawford. Warner's has really become the caretaker of old Hollywood. You know, MGM used to be the place, but after its demise and everything was sold off, auctioned, and poor Debbie Reynolds couldn't get people to listen back in the day. And I bet they're all kicking themselves. They're kicking themselves now that they didn't. But so much disappeared. But luckily, a lot of things have now landed, especially with other studios as they collapsed. Warner's now has millions of props. They've got the costuming. I'm waiting for them to open up on special tours the actual costume archive with original drawings from costume designers and accoutrements such as eyeglasses or cufflinks or jewelry. So, but definitely, if you are in LA and you want a fun experience, go to Warner Brothers, but make sure you do the Warner Brothers TCM Classic Film Tour. Because that's not going to be every tour, I don't think. So you need to check with them and find out when that is so that you can get the full benefit of it. So that's my mini wrap-up of TCM. But now we're going to bring him live. Oh, Lord, here he is, the man of the hour. Hey, Frank.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm the man of the hour. Well, very exciting. I mean, what an hour we're in store for. If I'm the man, it's going to be one wild hour.
It always is with you around. Well, just so you know, your presence in studio is very missed today.
Well, I appreciate it. I tried my damnedest, but damn it, if life didn't end up thwarting my plans and throwing all sorts of monkey wrenches, I got not like a serious car accident, but I got rear-ended a few days ago and had to deal today with taking my car into the shop to the appraiser and all that fun stuff you do when you get into a car accident and you have insurance. Or if you don't have insurance, I guess. But I do have insurance, so that's nice.
And if you didn't, you're not going to say it on air.
Right. You got that right. But
you're okay.
Yeah,
though.
And I was, by the way, at a complete standstill, just at a light, rear-ended out of nowhere. So, I mean, more innocent I could be. I know what you're thinking, Deb. You're thinking, what sort of shenanigans did you do to get involved in a car wreck? No, in this particular case, nothing. I was innocent as a weeping dove.
Well, and I have to say, as Pam is like motioning to, you know, owner Nick, because Nick is actually here today. Nick, 6 weeks ago or so, was in a similar kind of car accident. He was at a complete stop at a light, got rear-ended from behind.
Well, that's exactly what happened to me. And the irony, of course, is I just picked up my rental car, and they gave me, like, I drive a Nissan Altima. They gave me just a nicer, newer Nissan Altima as if just to sort of taunt me for having an old car. Like, hey, just want to let you know, here's your exact model, but slightly better, all right? Don't get used to it, partner. You'll be back in your old clunker soon. So if you see me, you know, scooting around Los Angeles this week, and, you know, we cross paths once in a while, you and I, you might get to catch me in my slightly newer and white instead of gray Nissan Altima rental car from Enterprise Rental Cars, ladies and gentlemen.
Isn't Enterprise the best?
Yeah, I like them. I'm a member. I'm an Enterprise Club member.
So am I.
Yeah.
I love Enterprise. It's like right after my father passed away back in 2010, and for a couple of years I was flying back east a lot. Mainly to see my youngest nephews, who were only 4 and 6 at the time, 5 and 7. And my youngest nephew, Tommy, he was obsessed with whatever rental car I got. And his criteria was it had to hold 3 dead bodies in the trunk.
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest, that's where I was going with that. Is it really dark and messed up? Because when you made the segue between your father dying and Enterprise, I was like, did you get an Enterprise funeral?
No, we did not. But no, Tom, because I rented from Enterprise, and there was...
But you rented a car from Enterprise, not a hearse.
No, I rented a car.
Okay, I just want to get the story straight, Deborah. You know what a stickler for detail I am.
I know.
Factual accuracy.
I know, but Tommy was always, and one of the cars he found unacceptable that I had rented. And we actually drove back. He was with me. We drove back to the local Enterprise rental place near, you know, the family.
And I bet you had words with them.
I did not. Tommy did. A 40-year-old
Tommy
did.
Well.
Complaining, and you know they knew me in there because I was there so frequently renting a vehicle. But Tommy was
not happy.
It has to hold 3 dead bodies because the guy, the manager there, he's like, "What's wrong with
you?"
By the way,
that's a moment that not every Enterprise employee gets to have.
No,
the ma'am, I've got a whole dead bodies in this car. Like, I'm sorry, sir, what?
But the kicker with Tommy was he kept stressing dead bodies, not just bodies.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is the headline of that story.
And he would climb into the trunk of each rental car, and he would roll around and see how many times he could roll. Just that would determine whether it would hold 3 dead bodies.
Sure. No, that just makes scientifical sense.
So you obviously didn't check your car to see if it would hold 3 dead bodies.
No, I didn't. That's an extra step that I didn't take. But, I mean, now that I know that step is an option and that is something I should be aware of, you can bet your bottom dollar I'm going to be asking.
Of course. Of course.
Now that I know that I can roll around in the car as if to recreate what a corpse would be like, that's a hard yes for me, Deb.
Yeah. Well, I digress there, but when you mentioned Enterprise, it was like...
Yeah, well, listen, I've learned a lot about Enterprise in these last few minutes, quite frankly. Holy mackerel.
Oh, Debbie has so many little trivial thoughts rolling around in her head.
I know. I mean, I was just like, yeah, it's a terrific car company. I didn't even think about the ramifications of the undead.
I'll tell you. Plus, the other thing is that means your trunk is also big, so that if you do get rear-ended,
Sure.
Less of a chance of the trunk coming up to you in the front seat.
Yeah, I mean, and also I got to say I was really lucky that I didn't have a bunch of equipment in my car, which I normally would. But as you know, I've been on tour lately, so I didn't have a trunk full of amplifiers and guitars. But had it been a normal time in my life when I, you know, wasn't out of town for so long, I absolutely would have. So who knows what kind of stuff could have gotten damaged. Luckily, that didn't happen. But would have, should have, could have, right?
But
am I right, America?
I think you are definitely right. Because actually, when you texted me this morning and you told me to let me know about the issue, and it's like, and I was thinking, after I thought, okay, is Frank okay? Then I'm like, oh my God, how much stuff was in the trunk?
Yeah, luckily none. And it's only because I haven't had a band rehearsal since I got back from Spain a couple weeks ago. Although I do have one coming up this Thursday. So had this happened on Friday, then I would have some destroyed equipment because the whole trunk did get smashed. Like it's
wow.
You know, I don't know if the car is going to be called totaled or not, but I mean, and what's shocking is, and this is the only reason I think it won't maybe get totaled, although it's a 10-year-old car, but is that I was able to drive it away. Mm-hmm. Like the frame alignment was fine. Mm-hmm. The whole trunk was smashed in, the lights were smashed in and everything, but the back window didn't explode, and it started up and drove away. And I was like, because it happened in Long Beach. And I was like, man, I don't want to deal with this in Long Beach and have to do all the repair. Like, if I can get it home and deal with this in L.A., it would be a lot better. So since the car drove, I said, what the hell?
Drove it home. As everybody knows, when it comes to cars, I really want to be, if it happens somewhere, I really want to be able to get it home.
Yeah. Because if not, then wherever you take your car randomly, which is generally the closest place to where your car got in an accident to where it's not drivable, then you're stuck dealing with that part of the city until you get your car fixed, which could be weeks, months, you know, who knows.
Or you call AAA. Call AAA and get it towed.
Yes, exactly. Although they have a radius within their tow, because I've pressed that radius with them. I've discovered that there is a radius.
Yeah.
I one time broke down on my way back from Big Bear, and AAA, they charge quite a bit after like a 4-mile radius.
No, actually, the minimum with your regular membership is, I think, is 7 miles. And then,
or seven, whatever it was. I was outside that.
If you have the upgrade, I think it's 100 miles.
Well, listen, Fancy Pants, I don't have the upgrade to superstar AAA level.
Well,
is
I don't either.
A?
I don't either, but I have the other one. I just happen to know that because having had the old car, that the Focus with the continually breaking transmission control module till I got rid of the thing, you know, breaking down in South Central every time it broke down, that's where it would break down. And I would, you know, it would be just outside the 7 miles, and a couple times it was
right.
Within.
Well, and then they charge you like an arm and a leg per mile after that 7 miles, and I found that out the hard way because I was like, well, I got to get this thing home, and I'm like 35 miles away.
Yep.
Like, oh.
But you know, now that you are home, and we haven't even had a chance to catch up about this other than what I saw your plethora of things you were posting on Instagram and social media about the trip in Spain, that whirlwind tour with Streetwalkin' Cheetahs.
Yeah, we had a darn good time. I can tell you that. We did, it was about 3 weeks, but Easter was right in the middle of that. And if there's one thing that you can find unites all Spanish people, is they're all hardcore Catholic. So the idea of being on tour in the middle of Easter meant you got a few days off that you wouldn't necessarily plan around, which was fine. But so meaning we did a 3-week tour, but there was like 2 days off in the middle, plus a few other little random days off, just because sometimes Sundays and Mondays are rough days to get good guarantees and when you're touring from. But anyways, we did about, you know, I don't know, 14 dates or so, and wow, it was absolutely awesome. This was the Streetwalkin' Cheetahs, a band that has been around since the 90s and had done a lot of touring of Europe in the early 2000s, but then we broke up, and then when we reunited, we kind of just stuck to playing the West Coast and didn't really go out and do a lot of, like, international touring. However, in the last few years, I have been doing a lot of international touring with my other band, Trading Aces, and with some of the musicians that I kind of do sideman work for. And so when the guys saw how much I was doing, they were like, hey, can we get a piece of that action? I was like, yeah. So I got us a tour booked of Spain, and you might ask, why Spain? Well, Spain has been always just been a very rock and roll friendly part of the world. So everywhere you go there, every town has a small little rock and roll bar or a big rock and roll bar. If you're in the bigger cities like Madrid and Barcelona, you might have several, and big theaters and stuff. And there's just a bigger audience for it, the kind of music I do, which is, you know, sort of reckless, fast rock and roll with kind of a punk spirit, I suppose. I mean, mm-hmm, we get called a punk band a lot, but to me, it's just kind of rock and roll. And, you know, we've been putting out records for a long time, and I've been making records on my own with, you know, other bands, and being a sideman for people like Wayne Kramer and Cheetah Chrome from the Dead Boys and Cherie Curry from the Runaways. And now I play in this band called Fear, and I did a solo record with Eddie Spaghetti, and I did a record with James Williamson from the Stooges. So for someone like me who's been traversing in the, like, kind of indie rock and roll underground scene for a long time, you know, Spain's a great place to tour. Europe is in general, because there's still, like, a big audience and respect for rock and roll music, and they're really hardcore, and they follow your career through the years, and they kind of really are the kind of fans that any musician would want, the kind who, you know, want to talk to you, and they'll buy some merchandise, and they come at the beginning and stay till the end, and they dance and they sing and they know all the words, and they're enthusiastic. So it's no wonder that I've been going all around the world and playing to those fans and really just enjoying the hell out of it. So the Streetwalkin' Cheetahs went to Europe and did about, you know, a little over 2 weeks in 3 week period of Spain, and had a blast. Like, we played some really big places and some really fun little bars, and got to meet people that had saw us, you know, 20 years ago and are still hardcore wow fans. And we had a new record out, this EP called Call the Dogs, plus yes another single called Crazy Operator that we put out in Europe just for these tours. And so it all went great. Had a blast. Now I'm going back to Europe in July with Fear. We're doing a big festival and a whole bunch of dates, so you can't keep me away.
Where in Europe will you be going with Fear?
Well, I just got all these dates confirmed. It is, hold on, I have to keep, like, a record of all this stuff now because there's just too much stuff. So we're going to Bologna, Italy on July 3rd, Rome on the 4th, Germany on the 5th, Amsterdam on the 6th, London on the 7th, and I think there might be a few more dates coming in. So about
wow
a week or so.
Wow.
Yeah, going to be very fun. And I've been working with Fear. We've made a new album since I joined the band, and that's going to be out in the fall. And there's a bunch of covers that we did for a covers album that will be out at some point. I don't know when. And then there's also, I've been writing with Leaving, working on material for what would be the next Fear record. And it's just been awesome. I mean, I really get along with him and also the guys who are in the new version of the band, this guitarist named Eric Razzo, and the original Fear drummer, Spit Sticks, and our bass player, Amos Cook. You know, they're all just great guys. Spit and Lee are the original members. They started the band, and, you know, they're both just really, really amazing, unique musicians. But they've surrounded themselves with these, you know, slightly younger musicians like myself who are really huge fans of Fear. So it's like, I'm really honored to be playing with these guys. And when we write material, I'm really kind of thinking about, like, well, I'm a Fear fan, so, like, what would I want a new Fear record to sound like? Geez, I want it to sound kind of like this meets this, you know. So it's fun to kind of inject my musicality, but also my, like, love and respect of their previous music, you know.
Wow. Now, a question for you, because you are a director also. With all of this new music that you're writing for Fear and recording with them, you know, one album, another one on the way, Streetwalking Cheetahs, will you be turning any of this into music videos and directing those?
Yes and no. In the case of the Cheetahs, yes. I actually, me and the other guys in the band, you know, we've all got brand new iPhones and they shoot 4K, so we shot a ton of footage that I just finished assembling into a music video for the song Call the Dogs. And that is entirely comprised of stuff that us, or in some cases the fans, shot on the road in Spain. And so it's got a very road kind of, you know, look to it. So in that case, yeah, I did, that's exactly what I did. In the case of Fear, we're definitely going to do a music video. There's a song, a new song in mind that we have for it. Whether I direct it or whether I enlist a director and kind of work with them, you know, if I'm in the band, depending on what I'm doing in the video,
it's
it might
hard.
Be a little tough to direct and sort of be a musician, but not necessarily impossible. On the other hand, I know a really great director that I work with a lot named Sarah Remich, and she is the DP on a lot of my music videos, and she's a huge Fear fan, and she had said to me, she's like, if you guys do a Fear music video, you have to let me direct it. And I was like, well, I mean, I would personally like you. She's like, yeah, but you're in the band now. It's going to be too tough to do both. And I'm like, oh, damn it. She's got me. So very well hand the reins over to her, very capable hands, because she's just like me in the sense that she's a great director who's a super big fan and understands kind of the legend of Leaving and Fear and just what their music means. And so I think she, if anyone can do as good or better job as I on that, it would be her. So we'll both be involved in it, put it that way.
So now for those of us, like, I don't know the legend of Fear and the music and all. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners don't. So since you will be going on tour to Europe, maybe it might sell a few extra tickets. And you do know that, you know, we do have, Behind the Lens does have a really big following in Italy. So,
excellent.
So explain, tell us about the legend of Fear and music.
Well, in Los Angeles, the punk rock scene started in the late 70s, you know, much like the rest of the world, partially ignited by the Ramones. But there was other stuff kind of brewing. And when the original wave of punk bands in L.A. started, you had bands like the Germs, the Screamers, the Gears, X. And the Germs were probably the first of what you would consider to be a hardcore punk band. And I say hardcore meaning that's a different style of punk than like the New York CBGB scene or the Detroit scene or even the rest of the LA scene. When the hardcore scene started, more kids from Orange County came up, more violence came with it. It became the whole scene of, you know, moshing and that whole much more physical take on punk rock. And so, and a lot more fighting and stuff. And so the one could, and again, this is all kind of history, and you could argue any of these points, but for this conversation, the Germs were probably the first real document of like a West Coast hardcore band. And the next wave after that, and I mean just a year later, would be Black Flag and Fear. And Black Flag and Fear kind of took, because the Germs were a really sloppy band musically. They weren't necessarily a great musical band, but they definitely were onto something, and they had this huge following and this big sort of influence on what punk looked like and sounded like, but they weren't necessarily the best people to execute those ideas.
Okay.
Black Flag and Fear were much better at taking that idea and like executing it musically. Black Flag had a really advanced guitar player named Greg Ginn, And, you know, they had a different front man for different albums, but like Henry Rollins and Keith Morris both came out of Black Flag and are both still to this day very compelling, influential front men and great lyricists with something to say. And Fear were kind of doing all that, but sort of parodying it too, because they were a couple years older, and Lee Ving, the lead singer, came from, you know, he was a theater major and a music major, and he had served in the war, or, you know, he served in the army. I don't know if he actually went to war or not, but he was, you know, in the military, and, you know, he came from the East Coast and moved out here with his family to be an actor and stumbled onto this underground scene. And when he first saw the first wave of bands that, you know, were, he was told were like, oh, these are the LA cool bands, he went to this club called The Mask, and he was like, boy, these bands are awful. But the scene is really interesting. Like, boy, the kids that are into these bands are really interesting. Then the second time he went to The Mask, he saw this great group called Black Randy and the Metro Squad, and he saw a few other bands that he thought musically were really more interesting, Top Jimmy and some folks. And again, he really was like, boy, this crowd is so enthusiastic and they're young and they're just really into it. I want this crowd. So he decided to form a punk band that was like going to out-punk the punks. Like, you think you guys are bad, you're just a bunch of middle-class kids. Like, I'm a mean, you know, dude from Philly. Like, I've seen people murdered. You know what I mean? I served in the military. Like, and then he was in Texas for a long time. I mean, he was a real kind of hardcore dude. And so he put together Fear as like, if you think that's hardcore, let me show you what real hardcore is. So their songs were faster, their songs were heavier, their songs involved a lot of jazz and a lot of different time signatures. They weren't in 4/4, which just means their music was much more interesting and challenging than a lot of the punk bands. A lot of the punk bands had great ideas and great looks, but weren't necessarily all that great, you know, musically. Fear were like really interesting musically, like doing some really avant-garde stuff in the guise of, like, you know, being very offensive. And then if they would write kind of a commercial song, it would be called like, I Don't Care About You, F You, and they weren't censoring the F, you know what I mean? So they wrote sometimes these very anthemic, catchy songs, but then there'd be like curse words. So they always sort of did these things to make sure they couldn't possibly be seen as accessible. And what happened was this director named Penelope Spheres, who went on to very much more mainstream success later on, but she directed this documentary called Decline of the Western Civilization, and she put Fear in it as the final band. And in my mind, they're the most impactful band in the movie. And they kind of just are like a neutron bomb. Like, you see, you know, you see Black Flag and you see X and you see the Germs, and they're all very interesting, not great musically, but very interesting people. And then, and the audience is kind of hardcore, but they kind of, they kind of seem a little artsy fartsy. And then you just see Fear and their audience, and it's just a huge fist fight. They're just like, what the fuck is going on? What? And then, you know, they play these songs and they're so relentless, and they're like, just don't sound like anything you've ever heard. So when I heard Fear, I was about 12 years old, and it blew my mind. I was scared of it. I thought it was scary music by scary, violent people, but I was absolutely kind of fascinated with it. I was also a kid that was into horror movies and just B-movies, and I started figuring out that the singer of Fear was also this actor, and that you could see him in movies like he's Mr. Body in Clue, and he's Jennifer Beals' strip club owner boss at the beginning of Flashdance, and he's in the movie Nightmares with Emilio Estevez, and he's like in all these little movies over the years. And I kind of just started realizing, like, oh my God, like, this guy's music was insane and so great, and he's also this cool actor who did all this stuff. So I've just always been a Lee Ving fan and a Fear fan, and he also had a country band called Range War, which, what could be more punk rock than when you're in the most, you know, enigmatic, hardcore West Coast, you know, shock rock band of all time, form a totally old school country band. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So in the height of his punkdom, he formed a hillbilly, traditional, redneck, you know, Texas style, not cool, not hip, big mustaches, singing about don't tread on me and cheating wives, and you know what I mean? It's like, whoa, that's the most punk rock thing anyone could do in the punk rock scene. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So now I'm playing in that band, too. Now I'm playing in Range War, and I'm playing in Fear. And the only real connection I have besides being a fan was just that my band, the Streetwalkin' Cheetahs, had toured with Fear maybe almost 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I had met and interviewed Lee over the years a few times. But really, I got it just because I was playing guitar, opening up in a band, opening up for Fear. And the manager, who was a Streetwalkin' Cheetahs fan, saw me and kind of went, oh, my God, why didn't I think of this guy? Because they were looking to get a new guitar player in the band. So he approached me, and I was like, hell yes.
Oh, my God. You know, just to, you mentioned Penelope Spheres. She was on the show back in 2017.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I had her on the show for the 25th birthday bash of Wayne's World.
I love Penelope's work. She's done lots of things that I love. But certainly, there's three Decline movies, and the third one is fine, but the first two were very impactful in my teenage years. And of course, everyone knows Wayne's World. But she also made a great movie called Dudes with John Cryer that I'm a big fan of. Mm-hmm. And a couple other random movies over the years. But she's solid. I like Penelope.
Yeah. But yes, so she has been on Behind the Lens as well as you.
Well. Looks like I'm hanging out with all the biggest stars.
But, you know, she's only been on once. You've been on many.
And I've been on. This is my fourth time, I think.
Fourth time.
Well.
Fourth time.
Top that, Penelope Spheres.
Yeah, you are now tied. One more, and you will be the champion guest of Behind the Lens.
Who's my competition? What do you mean, one more?
Pam, what? Steve Lee is four times.
Oh, Steve Lee thinks he's so smart.
In studio three times. Well, he did bring two Oscars, but they're not his.
Okay.
They're part of the Sound Museum. He called in once. And then Steve Alaric, our friend Steve, the bartender actor.
Well, I'll let it go, but...
you one more time and Hugh will be the reigning guest champion. I don't know. Should it be like a Saturday Night Live? Do I then give you, a BTL jacket?
Yeah. No, I think that's appropriate.
A five-timer jacket?
Yeah. Yes, I think that's exactly. I would like it to be satin if possible. If not, it could be like a bomber, high school sort of bomber style jacket. But I would prefer a satin jacket. Something that you'd see a young Colt Seavers wearing, really.
A young Colt Seavers who looks like Ryan Gosling?
No, I mean the original Colt Seavers. I don't go with this Ryan Gosling Colt Seavers stuff. I'm what you call a Lee Majors.
That's
man.
Right. Die hard.
Right.
I'm not happy about,
Well, when I'll tell you this, and I haven't seen the movie, so
no, I haven't either.
Only me complaining as a fan of the original TV show.
Yes,
but what I don't like with, and again, I'm going to talk about a type of movie here. But what I don't like is when they do these, remakes where they don't keep any of the details of the original. Like, okay, he's a stuntman who's a bounty hunter, but the show was more than just that loose. One sentence explanation. And so then they just make, this totally different show with different characters, different motivations. And all they keep is just, he's a stuntman bounty hunter. And if you get into the backstory of that, if the whole movie just about him as a stuntman becoming a bounty hunter, I'm like, well, that's not even what the show is about either. Because it wasn't about how he got to be. There was never a flashback episode.
Right.
It was just stated. He's a bounty hunter now. He says in his little speech, basically, times are tough, got to pay that rent. That's the only explanation that we ever get on that show. And now they made a whole movie around the backstory that doesn't exist.
Right. And even with the trailers that I have seen so far for the film, they're really pushing the romance aspect.
Right, and that's another thing. There was no romance in that. I mean, don't get me wrong. There was romances, and occasionally right. Colt would, you know, meet an old flame. But there was the Jody character was his sidekick,
yep.
And quite frankly, he barely involved her. Usually, it was like, "All right, Jody, you stay home."
Yeah. So, and I mean, knowing all the real stuntmen from over the ages, you know, going back to the guys who were doing the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. No, they had romances, you know, it was, but that wasn't the primary focus. And the trailer, the trailers really make it look like that is such a huge, huge part of the movie. Now, granted, I do want to see the film only for what the guys at Stunts Unlimited have done with all of the stunt work. I mean, the rollover on the beach, that's already set a Guinness Book of World Records, 8.5 rolls, which is unheard of. But because of new technologies and all, yes, your stunts can get more advanced. Hopefully all the safety, and knowing the guys at Stunts Unlimited, they're very safety conscious. So I'm sure that these, you know, even greater stunts are safety conscious and look spectacular. So I do want to see that. Having said that, I have no interest in seeing Ryan Gosling as Colt Seaver. I am not I love Emily Blunt. She's funny as can be. And she plays well against guys. She played well against Dwayne Johnson in The Jungle Book. I'm sure she'll play well against Gosling. But I'm not interested in the love story.
Me neither.
I want to see good old-fashioned, just wall-to-wall stunts.
Yep.
And throw in some bounty hunting there.
Yeah.
But
you know what's a great sort of forgotten bounty hunter movie is The Hunter, which I believe is Steve McQueen's last movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's from like 80 or 81, maybe. Do you know? Do you remember the movie I'm talking about?
I remember the movie.
Yeah, great movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so is the movie The Stuntman. Is a great movie.
I love The Stuntman.
You know, that's just spectacular. Now, something I want to ask you about all of your stage shows and performing. Is there a big difference between the fans in Europe and the fans in the United States in terms of their behavior, their presentation, and their appreciation of live music and concert?
There's overall greater and more heartfelt enthusiasm from the folks in Europe. Rock and roll still means something there. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, it means something to people out here too. But, you know, America's changed a lot in terms of, you know, pop music, dance music, the influence of hip-hop. And I don't mean those as bad things because, as you know, I'm a huge, huge, huge hip-hop fan.
Right.
I made two documentary films about hip-hop.
Yes, you did.
But all of that is sort of, you know, taken the focus away, if you will, of rock and roll as sort of the, you know, the music of the youth or whatever. You know, it's rock and roll has become kind of almost out here, it's like jazz or blues. It's, you know, to go see a real rock and roll band is like, ooh, you know, it's something special because there's not many out there.
Right.
In Europe, there's, you know, rock and roll music, punk rock, heavy metal still sells a lot of records and fills big halls and does great concert business. And there's all these giant festivals and that really keeps the music alive. So the fans out there are, especially if you've come a long way, like they're very appreciative that you're there. If they don't, you know, if you have music that they don't have like out there, or they, you know, they go to your merch table and there's t-shirts or albums or singles that they don't have, they will buy all of them, you know, which is a great way to support a band that's on the road. But they're also doing it because they're hardcore and they want that music. They come out and they dance harder. You know, in Los Angeles, like, you know, people don't really move around much when you play live shows. They might enjoy the show, but they don't, like, dance a lot. And they don't mosh. Maybe if you go to some real hardcore shows, you'll see mm-hmm. some slam dancing and stuff. But it's just not like, you know, we don't here in Los Angeles show, and I'm just as guilty. I go to shows and I stand on the back with my arms folded like everybody else. But we don't really show our enthusiasm, you know, physically and with our bodies and our voices the way that they do in Europe. When we go and play Europe, the fans are boisterous and they're drinking and they're having a good time and they're yelling at you and, you know, they want you to yell back and they want to talk to you afterwards and they dance and dance and dance. If we were doing 2-hour shows, they were dancing for all 2 hours.
Wow.
And, you know, we go out in the crowd and we kind of get real physical with the audience and they bring that energy right back. If we go climbing around, they're making sure we don't fall. Like, it's just this very camaraderie sort of thing that you don't get as much out in the States. And they also just really pay attention to the music. Like, half the time they don't even speak the language, but they know all the words, which is crazy.
You know, and I have noticed that over the decades. I will never forget back in, I think it was 1969, summer of 69, I had relatives come over from Germany. My grandmother's nephew, Friedel Nürnberg, his wife Margend, and their daughter Beata. She was a couple years older than me. Friedel's the only one that spoke English.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, everybody else, they spoke German. Now, and it always amazed my grandmother and my father how Beata and I could communicate very easily. And we communicated over the Grassroots Sooner or Later song. She knew every word in English. And from that, it was like a constant throwing 45s and albums on my grandfather's Blah Punk stereo. And that, and she could learn the lyrics, the words in English perfectly. But don't ask her to speak to you in English, because she couldn't.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. There's just a reverence. There's a reverence for the arts out there,
yeah,
that I don't know if we quite have here, or at least for an artist like me who traverses more in the underground and the indie world, you know, meaning I don't have a major record deal. When my movies come out, they're on indie distributors. When my albums come out, they're on indie labels. And I do well with that stuff. But, you know, I'm not like Johnny Depp or something working on huge budgets and stuff or big studio pictures. So you get, you know, the people that are coming to my shows are people that are like really into what I do. And there's this reverence for it that is, you know, you don't get as much out in the States. Like, they really sort of respect that you have made this choice to be an artist and that you travel to wherever they are to bring them your art in person. Like, that's a very sort of respected and acknowledged thing out there. Whereas I feel like when you tour in the States, it's a lot more like, oh, you guys are here? All right, great. Shit, I guess I'll still drink and I'll see your stupid band. You know what I mean?
So-
no, I'm a totally big fan. I've been listening to you guys 20 years. Yeah, man, I'm totally into your bullshit. It's great. Yeah, man. My friend's band's coming next week. I'm going to be even bigger douche to them.
You know, I've got to ask you, because we're talking about merch. We're talking, you know, and they love buying it. Now, what about for your fans here in the States or fans that can't make it to your concerts? Can they buy merch from your various bands, from Cheetahs?
Yeah, I mean,
from
the way that...
Where? How do they find it?
The way that we do everything these days is through Bandcamp, and, you know, my music is available on all streaming services. So if you go to Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music, iTunes, Amazon, it's all Google Play, it's all there. However, if you want to buy T-shirts or vinyl, or you want hard copies of CDs, or you just want to buy the music digitally but know that the artist is actually seeing more than a fraction of a penny,
mm-hmm,
on that, then you would go to Bandcamp. And you can go to my Bandcamp site, you know, Frank Meyer. You can also go to any of my individual bands, Streetwalking Cheetahs, Trading Aces, Highway 61. You know, the different bands I play in all have Bandcamp and all have social media. And that's sort of a way that the bands can take a little bit more ownership over their merchandise. You know, on one hand, you want your music to be everywhere. You know, I mean, you want like someone on a digital jukebox or Spotify or whatever to just look up your band or look up you as an artist and find it. On the other hand, and unfortunately, it's like this in all of show business, the monetization of streaming money is just not happening from the artist's point of view. So, you know, if someone watches a movie, you have to make it all the way through for anyone to get paid, and they might be getting paid a penny on that view, and that penny goes to all the people that made the movie. So, you know what I mean? You can imagine it takes a lot of pennies, i.e. a lot of views, i.e. a lot of streams in the music world, to make that something that you could actually, like, pay your rent off of. So on one hand, you kind of give your music away because you want it out there in the world for people to get in an easy way. On the other hand, you have to do things like concerts and T-shirts and, you know, merch that's not being controlled by a record company and that's not being streamed. And you have to have hard copies that you can sell, and you have to be able to, people have to go to your merch table at your concert or go to your Bandcamp site or your website or wherever you house that stuff. And they got to be able to buy it at a price point that mm-hmm. makes sense to the band. So, you know, if the label's going to charge $15 for a piece of music, you know, like a vinyl single or something that we do, excuse me, then why can't the band charge that exact same amount? Not any more, not any less, but just charge that. And you can buy it over here and we get the money, or you can buy it over there, they get the money, or you can buy it on streaming and no one gets the money. You know, and Apple gets the money.
No.
So, you know, meaning the point is you want your music out there, but you have to sort of put it in multiple platforms and allow the audience to decide. Like, if they just want stuff to be easy, and I do this all the time as a consumer, I'm just going to get it through Apple Music. I've got a subscription. Cool, but the band, and that makes it easy for me, the consumer, but the band gets nothing on that. So the artist gets nothing on that. So maybe Taylor Swift does, you know what I mean? Because she's got a big enough, better, good enough record deal with enough records being sold. But the rest of us, that's just not the way that we can function as artists that are trying to pay rent. So you have to do things like come to my concert, go to my band camp, you know, or if you're going to do things like Spotify and YouTube and stuff, become a subscriber so that at least I can like kind of keep track of you and count that towards something like, hey, look at how many subscribers I have on YouTube. That means something. That's a metric that people care about. But if you can't even do that, it's really difficult to say I have any fans if you don't sell music on Bandcamp and you don't have metrics in the mm-hmm. world of YouTube and Spotify and all these things that promoters and people, record companies look at, you know.
And see, and you understand this from a music point of view and from a film point of view for all of those indie filmmakers.
Right. I'm getting screwed by everybody.
It's like, Frank, and the person that rear-ended your car.
Yes. I mean, look, I'm not the first to say I got rear-ended in Long Beach.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So, now, when is the new music for Cheetahs coming out?
Cheetahs, we have two EPs out now. Both of them came out while we were on tour. One is called Call the Dogs, and it's available through Heavy Medication Records in Norway. But you can, again, you can get it through our band camp or their band camp. Make life easy for you if you don't happen to live in Norway. Then we did a deal with a label in Madrid, Spain, and they are called Ghost Highway, and that record is called Crazy Operator, and that's like a 7-inch single. So that's a traditional small single, the way
wow.
you think of as a single. But the Call the Dogs is a 10-inch single, so it's not a 12-inch vinyl full LP. It's smaller than that, but bigger than a 7-inch. It's kind of like the old Dick Clark 50s records that are like those sort of medium size. Anyways, so we did Call the Dogs as a 10-inch and then a 7-inch of Crazy Operator. Both of them have 4 brand new songs on it. And
wow.
now we're doing some music videos for those songs. And then I guess we'll record some new songs. I'm also recording the new Trading Aces album right now, which is my band based out of Europe. It's a bit more of a hard rock band. And then I'm working on the new Fear stuff, which is going great.
And Pam's just sitting in the booth shaking her head as you're rattling this off.
It's a lot, Pam. Believe me. The one people always joke, they say, oh, you must never sleep. Well, that's actually not a joke. I don't really sleep very much. And it's a curse. It's a blessing and a curse. I get a lot done, but I don't sleep very much. So
now I have to ask you, because I know Pam was looking forward to this today, and I put you in charge of commandeering the LTC all-natural beef jerky from Marcus on Friday.
Yes.
Did you secure any from him?
Oh, I secured it.
And you ate it.
Well, I might have eaten it too, yes. How did you know that?
Because I know you, Frank.
Oh, my God. Yes, I did. I ate it.
See, that's the real reason he's not in studio today is because...
Oh, my God. Believe me, I wish, because if I could take back the damage to my car and trade it for beef jerky, I would in a heartbeat. But, yes, for one thing, I will say it was four packages, and when I got it, he was like, well, you got to have some, taste some. I go, well, I can't. I've only got four packages. He's like, oh, you could have one. So there was only three by the time he forced me to sample some. And that was on Friday, and it was 3 days of me just sitting there looking at that beef jerky going, I want to open you so bad.
So you opened it this morning after you knew you had to do the car thing.
Oh, I would like to say that, but no, I dusted them all by last night.
Oh, great. See, this is the real reason he's not here, folks. He was too embarrassed to show up without the
No, I could have. Look, I'm not in studio. I could have absolutely lied about it, too, and just been like, yeah, but I'm sitting here holding the beef jerky. But no, listen, I'm a truth teller.
I know you are. I'm just busting on you.
Well, listen, the reality is Marcus, the creator of this fine product, should be stoked because I literally couldn't go like 24 hours without consuming that damn beef jerky. It's so good.
And,
but,
he needs to
hand it to me shrink-wrapped like he's done before, because then I can't get into it as easily.
Well, and see, normally he would have given it to me, but I couldn't be there because of
Then we can blame all this on you.
Oh, very funny. But I commandeered you. You were to commandeer the LTC all-natural beef jerky. I gave you that job.
Well, okay. I did not fail you.
You did not.
I did commandeer it. The problem is I then lost control and I ate it. But the commandeering was no problem. You did give me the authority.
Yes, I did.
And I used that authority wisely and commandeered the beef jerky. The problem is at that point I lost all self-control.
The problem is it is so good. The LTC all-natural beef jerky is so good that you want to eat it all at one time.
Well, it's a problem that a lot of makers of fine food products would like to have, but...
they don't.
You know.
But Marcus does. But because you're not here in the studio today, you don't get to see or touch the beautiful tablescape I have, all TCM.
Wow.
The swag was very there for press. We got one book. That was our swag. From the moment they met, it was murder. All about film noir.
Wow.
But that was what we got. We didn't get a tote bag this year or anything, or no wine from the wine club. And then in the little TCM boutique, very disappointing. They had no anniversary. This was the 30th anniversary of TCM, 15th anniversary of the festival. No anniversary tote bag. Just a plain canvas tote with a zipper and just stamped on there in brown, TCM, Turner Classic Movies. That was $30. That was the extent of the tote bag to even buy. Now, the people that spent $2,600 for a pass...
Yeah.
Oh, they got a beautiful tote bag, anniversary tote bag. It's gorgeous. I'm hoping if there are any extras, TCM's going to put them online and sell them. Because it's like 15th anniversary, you think there would be totes available for people to just buy.
Sure.
Like they do every year. They did not.
But no.
They had lots of TCM socks. There again, not 15th anniversary, not 30th anniversary. there were some pins, TCM pins. Every year they come out with some. There was the annual one magnet, two T-shirts, one in blue, one in white. And then, of course, all the books. Well, I have all the books that TCM has put out. So the only other thing that was left for me to get during the festival was yesterday, a very, very important book signing, Billy Dee Williams, his autobiography.
Mr. Lando Calrissian himself?
And Mr. Lando Calrissian signed my
wow.
book.
Wow.
Yes.
The emperor of Cloud City, for crying out loud.
Yes. And see, if you were here, you could touch it.
Wow.
You could hold it.
Wow.
But maybe if I see, am I going to see you later today?
You might, in which case you're going to get a gander of my sweet, sweet rental car ride.
And I will let you touch the book.
Wow.
I know.
That sounds like an Elvis Costello song, Touch the Book.
You know, I was very generous, and I did get one for my attorney. Gotta keep the attorney happy.
Yes, exactly.
And I know how much Brandon loves Billy Dee Williams. So he was very excited when I surprised him with that, an autographed copy yesterday. So I'm good sometimes. I'm good.
Yeah, real good.
But so hopefully I will see you later today. I thank you so, so, so much for calling in.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Next time I'll be back in person, in the flesh, with my guitar, singing songs of destruction.
And I will.
But until then, know that if I'm not with you, I am being assaulted by vehicles and heavy machinery somewhere in this fair city.
Or Mojo.
Or Mojo, yes. That's my dog, and he assaults me with love.
So I'm going to have to work on getting you a five-time, for the next time, getting you a five-time BTL satin jacket.
I want it. Yes.
That just popped into my head today. Now I'm in trouble. Now I gotta deliver on it for you.
Awesome.
All right.
Well, have a great rest of your Monday, and I will see you soon. And all the best to the Behind the Lens crew.
And hopefully I'll see you later today.
You got it.
I'll probably
take it easy.
I'll probably be around about 2:30. And that was, let me turn this off. There we go. And that was the wonderful Frank Meyer. You got the update on everything. You've got the update on the bands. You've got the update on the tour that just ended, the tours that are coming up. You've heard all about TCM. Oh, and getting Frank swag for all his different bands, where you can go to buy all of that and buy the music as well. So that is all the time we have today and more. So, yeah, Frank did get his whole hour. Pam's nodding. Next week, I will be back. I don't know who we're having next week. I'm waiting for confirmation. They're either going to be call in next week or the week after. But coming up in May is going to be returning for the second time, or it might be the third time, I have to check. Charlie and Vlas Paraplides are back with us to talk about season 2 of Blood of Zeus. The incredible animated series on Netflix. Season 2 is finally coming out. I think it's breaking on May 3rd. I cannot wait. I adore Charlie and Vlas. And they're going to be with us, and it looks like on May the 13th. So you don't want to miss that, especially all the Blood of Zeus fans, because Charlie and Vlas are wonderful. I just adore them. So, that's it. Until next week, I'm Debbie Elias. This is Behind the Lens.